the Democrats in the 1st U.S. Congressional District, Thomas Bry and Ryan Solon. The winner of this Democratic primary will then earn the right to run November 8th against the Republican primary winner for the 1st District U.S. Representative, a position currently held by Representative and Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, who is being challenged in the Republican primary by Paul Nealon. For our listeners, in case you're wondering if this election affects you, the 1st Congressional District encompasses all of Racine County, all of Kenosha County, almost all of Walworth County, and portions of Rock, Waukesha, and Milwaukee counties. Well, welcome to both of you today, Thomas Bry and Ryan Solon, and thanks so much for taking time from your busy schedule to be with us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
We're going to begin by asking each of our candidates to give a 3-minute response to introduce themselves to our listeners. Please let our listeners know a little about your background. What are the things in your background, in your life, and your work that make you qualified for this? And also, what are your goals going into this? Why did you decide to run at this point? So we will give you each 3 minutes, and we'll start with Tom Bry.
Okay, thank you, Linda. It's good to be here. Yes, my name is Tom Bry, and sometimes Bry, I'll answer for all of them, just call me Tom. But I am a fairly typical, mostly normal, working stiff, who, by chance, 11 years ago, got hooked into politics. So one way of looking at my campaign is that it really is just a natural progression from the last 11 years of getting deeper and deeper involved. But more specifically, roots make a difference. I was born and raised in Marshfield, Wisconsin, right in the center of the state, ninth of 12 children, fifth generation Wisconsinite. My dad fought in World War II, worked at the Marshfield Brewery until it closed, and then at the post office. Mom was a nurse. So in Mike McCabe speak, the Blue Jean Nation guy, I'm a commoner. I'm wearing blue jeans now. I campaign in blue jeans. So that's my roots. Background makes a difference. After high school, I graduated with I went to college, got a math degree from Viterbo College in La Crosse. A few years after that, I went back to school, got a business degree from UW-Stevens Point. And then I worked for 5 years as a bank examiner, state of Wisconsin bank examiner, stationed out of Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I went back to school one final time, got a mechanical engineering degree from UW-Madison. I graduated, got married, and a job opened up in Janesville, and that's where I've been with my wife Sylvia, raising our 7 kids ever since. For the last 20 years, I've specialized as a plumbing engineer. Anything you can put through a pipe, that's what a plumbing engineer does. I've worked in the building trades, and no, I'm not a real plumber. I love my job. I love my family. And that hasn't changed these past 11 years, but it has become obvious as I've gotten deeper and deeper into politics is that Paul Ryan is absolutely wrong for our country, and he needs to be eliminated. One of the things you mentioned is, well, this is an intro-level position. You know, House of Representative was intended to be filled with average, typical people who are close to the people and who want to take a couple years out of their life to help make the government better. So it wasn't intended to be filled with millionaire aristocrats or career politicians. That's not what the founders intended for the House. You mentioned what are some of the goals, and you get that a lot. What are you going to do the first 30 days or day one? So a couple answers I always have is pass H.R. 4191. Representative Peter DeFaz of Oregon has his Wall Street transaction tax bill. It's already out there, already been introduced. It's scheduled to raise $150 billion a year once it's implemented, which is a full third of the annual budget deficit, about $450 billion this year. So that would be a huge start to addressing the economic inequality and redistributing, taxing those at the top. The other thing I want to mention just real briefly, I know my time must be up, is the collegiality lunches. Secretary of State Schultz mentioned that of the three biggest problems in Washington, one of those three is that people don't talk to each other across the aisle. So I have a notarized statement on my website saying that I will invite the other 434 reps over the first 2 years to having a lunch to get to know them.
It's an important issue. Thanks. Good intro, Tom, and that went a little over, so we'll give you, Ryan, a little extra time here, too. So, again, your background and your goals.
Certainly. My name is Ryan Solon, and unlike Tom, I did not grow up in Wisconsin. I have a little more varied background. I was actually born in California, had my formative years in Idaho, and right after I got married, my wife and I, we moved here to Wisconsin. For my background, like I said, I went to high school in Idaho. It's a very Republican area, but in those formative years, I was not really into politics that much, and I think that's fairly typical across the board. But shortly after high school, I started becoming more interested. I learned a whole lot more. I started having the desire to serve my country, and I really received that opportunity to serve my country when I finished my information systems degree at UW-Milwaukee, and shortly thereafter, I joined the military. I was on active duty for a total of 8 years, and in that 8 years, I did serve in Iraq. So I do have a perspective on military affairs as well as international. Also during that time, I completed a master's degree in international relations through Troy University out of Alabama. After the 8 years that I did in the Army, I felt that there were other ways that I could serve my country. And in addition, it felt like the right move at that point for my family. I really wanted to put down some roots somewhere. And because we have family already here, this made logical sense to move. So in 2012, when I got out, I actually went back to school for a short time to refresh some of my skills, and while at the same time got more involved in politics. I began really digging deep into the issues and figuring out where I stood on all of those issues, and because of those positions, it naturally led me to the Democratic Party. I started getting much more involved, and I started looking for opportunities to run for office. My background, because I have a much larger base at the federal level, made this a very good fit. And so I decided it was time to throw my hat in the ring. Now, as far as where to start, right now there's an awful lot of division in politics. Everything's very, very polarized. It has been that way for quite a few years now. And so trying to push through legislation, I think, right at the very beginning would quite possibly be a mistake. I think what's needed right now is being able to reach across the aisle and get to know the other members of Congress, try and find out their positions, find that common ground without any real legislation necessarily in mind. The point is to make it known that you are willing to work with them and that you do want to make a bipartisan effort to make change and to affect progress. From that point on, I believe that that would be a good springboard and really could make a difference.
Great. Excellent. Both of you, I like that both of you are talking about bipartisanship because it's such a problem, and all of us know that there's so much dysfunction. So, okay, there's so many issues facing Congress in our country today that I know we can only touch on a few, but if you do that briefly, I think one interesting thing about these two candidates is that they're both Democrats, but they do differ on a number of the issues, and you'll hear that as we start talking about some of these issues. So maybe I think I'll start with the issue of gun deaths and gun violence in our country. And a recent poll suggests that across both parties, there's some desire for some change in the gun laws. So where do each of you stand on gun laws for our country? And I'll start with Ryan.
Okay. There's definitely a problem with the number of guns that are out and about in this country. I think to say there isn't would be highly ignorant. What we need is we need the universal background checks for every transaction, regardless whether it's private or through retail. The fact of the matter is that we need to be able to know who's purchasing these weapons. We need to know what their background is and possibly get some insight into why they're purchasing that weapon. In addition, I think that we need to address the issue of accidental shootings. There seem to be an awful lot of those as well. Safety training would go a long way to preventing a lot of those. My own idea in this regard is to license a person on a specific class of weapon, much the same way we license people on cars. When you license someone on a car, you're given a certain class that's marked on your driver's license, and it states that you can drive any type of vehicle within that class. It doesn't specify which one. And, you know, if you want to move up to a truck, for example, a large semi-truck, you would have to get a different class, and you have to get certified in that class. So if we did the same thing with weapons, maybe break it down by rifles or by pistols or so forth, and then run a certification course where it's not just something that's 4 hours long, but really an extensive course, maybe every evening for 2 or 3 weeks, something to really ensure that they understand the safety behind these weapons and know how to use them properly.
Great. Thank you, Ryan. And Tom?
Well, Ryan and I do agree on the common sense kind of changes. More training is obviously good, better, but again, if someone goes bad and they're trained, maybe they don't need a 30-bullet magazine for their semi-automatic rifle. So there are common sense changes, and there are a lot of those that can be made, just reinstituting the law that expired 8 or 10 years ago about semi-automatics. So there's a lot of ways to tighten up the laws, and the more the better as far as I'm concerned. I don't think we're going to go far enough, but I think, like you alluded to, that we're getting close, I think, to a critical mass. More and more people are directly and indirectly affected by gun violence. The polls show well over 80% recently on, yeah, let's do something. If you're on a no-fly list, either, you know, you maybe shouldn't be able to buy a gun. So there's a lot of movement that way, and I think we're getting closer and closer to that critical mass to get some real change here. Just one other thing I'd like to mention a lot is that the Second Amendment is exactly one sentence long, and everybody who went to third grade knows a sentence is a complete thought. So when people pull out that the right to bear arms shall not be infringed, that's half of the sentence, but they're completely disregarding the first half, which says, you know, well-regulated militia being required. So automatically, they're already distorting the intent of that Second Amendment. I don't wake up in the morning thinking, oh, how can I repeal the Second Amendment? But there are common sense changes that can and need to be made.
And assault weapons is among them?
Yeah,
yes. Okay, great. So next question, and I'll start with you, Tom. Climate change continues to be debated and have detractors, and yet we certainly are seeing indications that our globe is warming up. So do you think action needs to be taken on climate change, and what do you believe needs to be done to address this issue if you do think that? Tom?
Yes, I agree. Climate change is human-caused. Some of the statistics you see out there, it's at about the same level of confidence that cigarettes cause cancer. So it seems pretty extreme to say that humans aren't directly responsible. And, you know, the greenhouse gases and all the carbon dioxide we're emitting, it's pretty, if you've ever been to the glacier, like Glacier National Park, we took a family vacation there a couple of years. I mean, they're all shrinking all over the world. There's only one or two that are growing, but all the rest are shrinking. So climate change and all the recent records we've been broken in the last 6 months, every month it's warmer. So I think it's already very extreme to say that it's not happening and it's not human caused. So yes, one way to do it is, again, carbon tax. Cap and trade, those are sometimes hard to understand and they get confusing to people, but I'm certainly for increasing the federal gasoline tax. There's a whole number of reasons, but price-based conservation works. A lot of people say we invaded Iraq twice because of oil. Let's get off foreign oil. The advantages of, well, again, the U.S. government can be very active in here's a case where trickle-down supply-side economics actually works, is if the U.S. government would invest more in green energy. Those kinds of technologies will spread. The free market capitalism does not price externalities, environmental costs. So when you burn gas, you don't get charged for it. It doesn't get priced accurately. So yes, absolutely, we need to do some changes. And again, I think the more the better.
Great, Tom. Thank you, Ryan.
I think you'll find that this is one of those topics where Tom and I are a little more closely aligned. Yes, we do need to do something about climate change. It is very real. We do have an awful lot of emissions, specifically from the fossil fuels. We use it in a lot of different aspects of our lives. We do need to implement some incentives to try and get the alternative forms of energy. Solar is getting better all the time. Wind power is becoming more reliable as well. And used in combination, it supplies a lot of energy. I don't know that we can get 100% away from coal because it is a stable energy source, but we certainly can reduce it. One other argument I've heard is that there are those out there who would like to cut off the use of fossil fuels immediately altogether, and I don't see that as a possibility. We've been using fossil fuels for around 100 years now. They're well established, and our economy really relies on them. So what we need to do is we need to have a gradual reduction. We need to find a plan that steps our way off of it, or at least to a reasonable point, and enact those renewable energies. I think that's the best way forward.
Great, Ryan. Thank you. There's always recurring controversial issues. The one that comes up during these elections probably the most is where you stand on the issue of a woman's right to choose versus right to life. It's controversial, it's difficult, but it's important for our listeners to know where you feel on what you feel on those issues. And Ryan, you can start.
Certainly. It is a controversial issue, and I know that there's an awful lot of arguments as to why they bring up this controversy. Personally, I think you'll find that my position is aligned very much with the vice presidential candidate, Tim Kaine, where his personal view states that he's opposed to it with the exceptions that are commonly given, the three. My position is essentially the same. My personal view is that I don't necessarily agree with abortion for convenience. I think there is definitely those exceptions that can be made. But
what
it's
are
also,
the exceptions, Ryan?
Oh, the rape, incest, and threat to the life of the mother.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I should have clarified. On that same note, however, it's not my goal necessarily to push my view on anyone. I do support Planned Parenthood. They do an awful lot of good things. They have a lot of services that people rely on, and to just cut their funding based on one issue that some people don't agree with would be a horrible mistake. Mm-hmm. So while my personal view is there, I still think that there is definitely value to what other people see.
Okay, great. Yes, Tom.
My position is pretty clear, and it's posted on the website, and I've had letters posted for years now on it, that it should be a woman's unencumbered right to have an abortion up until viability. Now we can have a discussion, and maybe that's where the discussion should be, is on where exactly viability is, and maybe we put a week or two before it, or it depends on the technology and the access that the woman has. But that's where the discussion needs to be. As Roe said in 1973, Roe v. Wade, 1973, another way to look at it is going the other way, is you hear a lot about, life begins at conception. Well, an egg and a sperm are definitely alive until conception. And if you go all the way back to that extreme, which a lot of people on the GOP Republican side want to go, is that there's all kinds of legal implausibilities. If a woman falls off her bicycle and she turns out to be 1 month pregnant, well, then is that manslaughter? I mean, this is not about male. I mean, it is male privilege. Again, Ryan mentioned that he won't force it on anybody, but a lot of people are saying, no, you can't have access. So, again, I think it's very clear that for a whole host of economic reasons, in addition, that Roe v. Wade is correct, and that's where the law is now, and that's where it should stay.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Trade deals have been in the news a lot in terms of the effect that people feel that trade deals have already made on jobs in our country, and there are varying opinions on TPP. Could each of you weigh in on where you are with the issue, and this time we'll start with Tom.
Mm-hmm. TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, is not about good-paying American jobs. It was written by and for multinational corporations who are trying to reinforce their hold on markets. It is about profits. There's really, in this world, no such thing as free trade or free market. There has always been, since the beginning of time, there have been winners and losers. The governments have picked those. So it's a misnomer to start out saying free trade. For example, and this is one where June 1, more than a year ago, an article, CQ Roll Call, Malaysia, one of the 12 countries, is a known human trafficker. And that was screwing up the most favored nation status that's required to be a member of the TPP. Well, what Paul Ryan did is that he wrote basically a pro-slavery amendment to it. He pulled it out of the TPP deal so that we could move forward on TPP. So again, the people who are being exploited in Malaysia are not going to be guaranteed good jobs. Their masters will be making profits. So, you know, trade is good and all that, but there are limits to it, and this is obviously a failed proposal. We need to take a step back and look at it.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Ryan.
I'm also against the TPP. I have a few details for the reasons why. We need to step back and take a look at corporations in the first place. Their entire goal is to make a profit. That's why they exist. They need to make money. So I don't have a problem necessarily with them trying to make a profit. I have a problem with greed. Where do you draw that line? That's probably going to be the eternal question. The fact of the matter is, I do believe that the TPP was made primarily to benefit just the bottom line of corporations. I do not see a whole lot in there that would really benefit jobs, really, in any regard. Some of these Asian countries that the TPP would be doing trade with already have, we already have a trade deficit with them. So it's not improving in that fact. In addition, I think if you were to ask most people what the TPP is, most of them wouldn't really know. It's not transparent. They don't know what's going on with it, and that's not right. I think that if we're going to keep our economy strong and we want people to work towards that, they have to know what deals are being made. I'm not against all trade deals. We are a global marketplace now. We mm-hmm. have to compete within the global sphere. If we try to isolate ourselves, our economy is going to crash. And so the best answer here is let's create some transparent trade policies, make sure that everybody has access and understands what it is, and I think we could move forward on solid footing.
Yes, go ahead, Tom. Tom is making a response here.
Two real quick ones. One is that, as Ryan mentioned today, corporates are about profit. However, back in the 50s, there was such a thing as a triple bottom line. Corporations need to make a profit, but they also need to take care of their employees, and they also need to take care of their environments, their towns. So, again, what Ryan is saying is very true, that it's all about profit, but that can change. If you had a job in the 50s with IBM, you know, you worked there 20 or 30 years, you were mm-hmm. guaranteed that job. So that can be changed. It's not going to be easy, but it is a path. And one other point is that, Ryan mentioned the deficit, trade deficit. Well, depending on the price of oil at any given time, 50% of the U.S. trade deficit is on foreign oil. So let's get off foreign oil, and that cuts the deficit in half. So a couple more things to add to this free trade
deal
stuff.
Okay, great. Thank you. Immigration has really been thrust to the forefront in light of Trump's call to ban Muslims and to deport undocumented Mexicans and to build a wall. Could each of you speak a little to the immigration issue, how you see it, and what you think about this wall idea? I think it's Tom's turn to start. Thank you.
This is a pretty big difference all the way up and down the Republican Democratic Party. We need to find a rapid path for full citizenship. If just by looking at people, citizens as assets, that we want to improve their lives, we want to make it easier for them, that they will help the economy. Most of the immigrants in this country came here to work hard and get a better life. So just by taking that paradigm that people are good, that they're an asset to the country versus stealing your jobs, changes the way you look at everything. We need a path for immigration. I'm drawing a blank here, but there are a couple mm-hmm. other.
They talk a lot about a path to citizenship for people.
Oh, here's the other one I wanted to mention is that
working.
Again, we're in a race against Paul Ryan, and Paul Ryan and Donald Trump are really very closely aligned on this issue, but with a different personality. Donald Trump flat out says, "Well, we don't want any of those Middle East. We don't want any Muslim immigrants. Period." But if you look at what Paul Ryan says, is that he says, oh, no, we're Americans. We love immigrants. All they have to do is complete this impossible-to-complete 10-year application form, and then we'll welcome them with open arms. However, if you're some family trying to escape all the mess in the Middle East with a 3-year-old kid, you're going to wait 10 years to try to get in. I mean, so it's at the mm-hmm. end of the day, the bottom line is there's no difference between Donald Trump and Paul Ryan in the fact that there will be very few or no immigrants.
Okay. Ryan.
Let's take a look at Donald Trump's reasoning for just a brief moment. He's proclaiming that he's doing this in a misguided name of protecting the country. He honestly believes that we're bringing terrorists into the country by allowing immigrants to come in. And he's very wrong. All right. The vast majority of them, and granted, we don't have a real good process for vetting them, but the vast majority of them just want to make a better life for themselves. I don't blame them for that. You know, if I were in that same position, I would want a better life for my family too. So we have to balance this level of security along with compassionate democracy. All right, this country was built by immigrants. It was started by immigrants. So to just close the doors and say that, no, they can't come in, it's a mistake. That is wrong. We do need a better path to citizenship. I do have a little bit of experience just in observing this in regard. While I was in Iraq, I had the opportunity to be there for a ceremony where well over 100 soldiers were made citizens of the United States. So they were serving long before they even became a part of the country officially. That, to me, is incredible. It's wonderful. And we should really be pushing this path because I think people will take advantage of it and they become a definite asset to this country.
Nicely said. Thank you. I would like to ask both of you about an issue that senior citizens like me think about a lot, but Medicare and Social Security. And actually, we don't think about it as much for ourselves because it's probably not going to go away for us, but for our future, for the children, for the grandchildren, for the generations to come. Where do each of you stand on Social Security and Medicare? And I think it's Ryan's turn to start.
Social Security is a very needed program. It was needed back when it was started, and it's been here since. We do need to continue to fund it. Obviously, letting it go bankrupt would be a horrible mistake, but the real question, I think, comes in is, at what point does it become bankrupt? I've heard different numbers, different statistics, but the fact of the matter is that the current cap of $118,500 is too low. As inflation has gone on, things have become more expensive. It's very, very difficult for people to live on what they're allocated as far as Social Security goes. So what I've looked at, and from my opinion, I think it would be much better to raise the cap at least to $250,000. That would bring in a lot of additional funds and definitely keep it solvent. I've also looked at the argument of getting rid of the cap altogether. Because I haven't researched it enough in depth, I'm not sure that we want to jump to that right away. But I do think that raising the cap would solve some of the fiscal issues that it's been seeing.
Okay. Excellent. Tom?
I mentioned in my intro that I got started in politics 11 years ago, and one of our kids, David, was working on a Boy Scout merit badge, and it turns out that it was a citizenship in the nation, and if he attended a political event, he'd get to check off the box. So he came to my wife, Sylvia, and he said, hey, if I attend this debate, he gets to check off the box. So it was Paul Ryan debating economist Dean Baker on privatizing Social Security. So that's how I got started 11 years ago. I was a classic low information voter until then, the life, the family, kids, all that stuff. But this is definitely one where Paul Ryan especially is using scare tactics up and down the line. Sure, obviously, if we raise the cap, that'll extend it a few years, that's great. But it is not, to talk about going bankrupt is in 11 years or 20 years or 50 years, whatever, is again, it's really just a scare tactic because the nature of people in this world is if there's a problem, you're going to deal with it not when it's going to out 20 years, when it comes to real. What happened in 1983 was the last time that the Social Security fund was going below zero, and that was going to happen like in 2 or 3 months, and when they decided something, so they kicked the ball down, kicked the can down the road for 50 or 60 years. Well, that's a pretty good long kick, so we can always modify it. And here, too, is there's absolutely no reason why the Social Security Trust Fund balance cannot be supplemented from the general Treasury funds. In fact, Paul Ryan in 2010, with his Roadmap for America's Future, where he projected outlandishly out 75 years, after about halfway out, 35 years or so, he showed the balance going exactly horizontal at a positive number. Well, how did he come up with his solution 35 to 75 years out? He simply said, if the trust fund balance ever falls below one, I got a chart I'll show you after it's, it, but it shows how slippery or how sleight of hand he uses. All he said is, if that should ever happen, we will transfer funds from the general fund to the Social Security Trust Fund. So if he's doing that in 35 years, then is it a crisis or not, Mr. Ryan, if that's all it's going to take in 35 years? So again, it's not a real issue. It's something that's just being trumped up.
And do either of you want to say anything about the privatizing? Because it's bigger than it's Social Security. It would be making it private, for profit. And it seems there's a great effort to push that way.
Sure. I'll jump in on that one right away.
Okay, this is Tom and Ryan can speak.
Yeah, absolutely. The privatizing of Social Security. We've seen what happened, the stock market dropping at the 2008 crisis, financial crisis. But this is a really good example of the difference between the finance economy and the real economy. And unfortunately, America has been hooked into the 401k idea, so over 40% of Americans now have a 401k tied to the stock market. So there is a deal that has been made here. But again, this is strictly a financial economy effect, is that if the stock market goes up or down, it's strictly on paper. Back to the H.R. 4191. Let's tax some of these financial transactions. It's what that's going to help is all the people in the stock market, the churn, all the people who are taking their cuts out of it. Again, it's the wrong way to go.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Ryan?
My answer to that is very simple. No. No privatization. And it is specifically because of that crash that we had. And you take a look at it. They handled that money very, very poorly. And I think a lot of them were well aware that it wasn't necessarily their money to take risks with. And so when the economy crashed, it wasn't them that got hurt. It was all the people that had money invested that got hurt. When it's not privatized, we don't see that kind of an issue. The risk is not necessarily there, at least not in the same way. So I think it's much better to just keep it the way it is, keep it with the government, and leave it at that.
And it's not only Social Security we're looking at with that, but it seems there's a real effort to privatize the post office, our public schools. It's a huge issue and will probably continue to be.
Yes, go ahead. Just
sure,
one thing
Tom.
Here, I think what this also illustrates, and this is a pretty big deal, really. I mean, because more and more economists say it really is the difference of the finance economy, just the money churning around, and it's you make money off of your money, and it's a wedge. If you're above the wedge, you do fine. Below the wedge, you're not going to get. It's not about the rising tide lifts all boats. It's about a wedge now. But I think there's another. There are two terms that get conflated a lot here, and Paul Ryan is notorious for this. And I think we need to make a big distinction going forward of the difference between savings and investing. Just like religious tolerance in the 1700s, it went from being a very bad thing to a good thing, is a total switch in the mind. People should be saving, yes, but 401k, and it's built as an investment strategy, and you get all kinds of tax benefits for that. It should be disentangled from the stock market and all the tax benefits. The matching plan should all be sent towards savings at your local bank or savings and loan. By pulling that money out of the stock market and putting it in your local banks, that would make a huge difference. But again, saving is very different than investing.
Okay. Excellent. The National Democratic Platform is said to be the most progressive one ever. And I think our listeners might be interested in how each of you feel about free college education and further expansion of health care, and we'll start with Ryan.
Well, I know you mentioned specifically the education and health care. Let's start with education. I don't believe all of it should be free. Here's the issue. Number one, it's expensive, all right, and so that's going to add another tax burden that I don't necessarily think that we can afford right away. I think that health care is a much more important issue to solve. I do think that we can have some of it publicly funded. My thought was have the first 2 years, when everyone's doing their general courses anyway, have those first 2 years covered. That gives them an opportunity to not only avoid incurring debt, but also to figure out where it is they want to go in their program. And if we didn't want to do that, we could take the flip side of it. How about we have state schools do away with the general courses altogether and have them move right into their program? Less time in school means less debt that they would have to take on. And if they do have debt, we certainly need to make a method by which they can refinance those loans so that they're not paying on them forever and paying exorbitant amounts of money in interest. Switching over to the healthcare issue.
So you would make it K-14 free public education rather than K-12, which it is now.
I guess if you wanted to say it as K-14, I suppose you could look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it more as an opportunity for them to figure out what it is that they want to do after high school.
Good. Okay, healthcare.
As far as healthcare goes, I think we need a universal system. We need to cover everybody. My experience with that is, again, on the government side, specifically when you're in the military, everyone is covered. The service member as well as their families are covered completely for everything. It is definitely doable. It's financed. It works. Now, granted, it's on a very micro scale, but why can't we just scale that up? Why can't we make it a bigger system and cover everyone?
Mm-hmm.
The benefits are enormous. It would affect things across all sectors. So I do feel we need that universal healthcare system.
Okay. Nicely said, Ryan. Tom?
Yeah, the most progressive platform ever, and a lot of that is due to Bernie Sanders.
Yes,
and I consider myself a huge Bernie supporter. Of course, the difficulty is getting the platforms, which are frequently ignored, into action later. But we'll see where that goes, and Hillary has certainly changed on all kinds of issues like TPP and again, the education. Now, what's mentioned a lot, again, Linda, even you mentioned free college, and that's what gets hammered a lot. When I started out 21 months ago on one of my lits, I said free 2 years after high school, and that would immediately get jumped on by anybody on the GOP side. Oh, nothing is for free. So I think what has been mentioned here is the transition from K-12 to K-14 is a lot easier for people to understand and palatable. The world has changed. You used to be able to survive with a family with a high school education. That's no longer the case. So to say it's very different to say that we're doing free college or tech school versus free tuition. There's still all kinds of investments on housing and room and board and time and all those. So if you want to get a little bit better response right away, don't say free college, say tuition-free post-secondary education. It doesn't just not for college,
okay.
It's for tech school too.
So
I certainly found that out on the road in the field because, it touches the idea of free, which, again, in the financial economy, the stock market goes up 1%. You see that pretty regularly. Market cap is $20 trillion, so 1% is $200 billion frequently just created out of the thin air or destroyed. So, again, there's a huge difference between microeconomics and macroeconomics makes a huge difference. Universal health care, absolutely. It needs to be removed from employer-based health care because if you're working for minimum wage, so that's definitely tied. If you're working for $10 or $12 or $15 an hour, if your employer does not provide health care, you're not going to be able to raise a family on that. So, absolutely, we need universal health care. Bernie's Medicare for All has a big advantage because a lot of Americans know what that is, so they're halfway there. But there are other ways to skin that cat. One I saw that was kind of interesting not too long ago is like making electric utility type area. So within that area, it's a monopoly. And the insurance company and the health care, the hospital, all the physicians are tied together with an overseeing board. A lot of advantages to that. But again, once you set the priority, universal health care, then we can see where we go.
Okay. We've covered so many issues. I'm really pleased at how much we have covered. I think if you each can stay to a minute, we can probably do one more question before you have your wrap-up statements. I think maybe I'd like to do criminal justice reform, but I guess what I'll say is go to their websites. And can you each name your website? Give our listeners what your websites are.
Certainly. SolonForCongress.com is where you'll find my website. I'm also on Facebook as well as Twitter. Twitter being rSolonCongress is the hashtag on that one, as well as SolonForCongress is the Facebook
page. Great. And Tom.
Tom B. for house.com to avoid that last name misspelling. But again, you can Google
Tom B.
it too.
For house. Okay.
And Facebook and all that. So absolutely.
Sure. Great. So I'm going to ask you a question that you probably can answer in a minute rather than try to do criminal justice, which is a huge issue. Just tell our listeners where you are with term limits. I know it comes up periodically, and it always seems like kind of conflictive because you can see the advantages of it, and then you think of people like Ted Kennedy is my example, who, thank goodness, he could be there all those years. So I think Ryan starts on this.
Certainly. I do believe in term limits, absolutely. And I did kind of put together my own little plan on how I see this. The president's limited to 2 terms for 4 years each. We know that senators are in for 6 years at a time, so let's limit them to 2 terms as well. That gives them 12 years. They should be able to accomplish some things in that time frame. And since they're able to get 12 years, then let's limit congressmen at 12 years as well. Keep them for 6 terms, and then it's time to rotate out, start getting some new ideas.
Great, Ryan. Thank you. Tom?
I do have a notarized statement on my website with a detailed explanation of my stance on term limits, and I have said that I would limit myself to 5 2-year terms, 10 years. Now, you mentioned about good politicians, and it's hard to have them not have a term limit. But, for example, Russ Feingold this year, he was in there for 18 years, and now he's been out for 6 years, and he's running again. So I think those 6 years out of politics is a very good thing. So part of my approach then is, well, after that term, whatever limit the Senate sets or not, and whether it's an informal agreement or a law, you know, okay, 18 years, and then you're out, but then go and run again. So,
Or run for a different office.
Oh, absolutely.
So, also a possibility.
So there's a lot of ways that in this case, Russ or another person could still be beneficial.
I'm always really torn on that issue because the problem with not having term limits is it gets so enwrapped in power and control and making lots
right.
of money.
Right. And I agree. That's a much bigger problem now than those people who are good that you want to keep in because there's always a way to, you know, go to a different branch.
Okay, I would like to give each of you a minute and a half. We're getting to the end here. To summarize why the voters should vote for you, what your goals are, whatever you want to say at the end here. So I think we start with Tom this time.
Okay. Well, we have touched on a number of issues, and there are a lot more out there. It's pretty clear that a lot of people are frustrated with Republican overreach. You go back to 2010 and the Walker, and especially Wisconsin, the Republican landslide. And it's been 6 years now. People are starting to get tired of the overreach when you control all three branches, education, open records, environment. Just in today's paper, they again struck down the voter photo ID and a number of the other voter suppression tactics. So I think people are starting to wake up. And again, this is obviously we're here about one election, Paul Ryan and the House, but it's about more than that. Bernie calls it the revolution. That's which is a pretty strong term, but it's that pendulum swing that I like to see it as. That I'd rather have this switch over this election than the next one, but the sooner the better. And again, Wisconsin, if we just flip 2 or 3, imagine in southeast Wisconsin, Amy Janus winning or Andy Mitchell defeating Robin Voss. And if we would defeat Paul Ryan, imagine the kind of notice that would give to all of Wisconsin and the rest of the country that it's time for a change.
Okay, great, Tom. Thank you. And Ryan?
I'm in this for the benefit of the country and certainly for the people that I would represent. You know, I do feel like the little guy as far as politics goes. This is my first time running for a position. In fact, I'm still working full time while I'm campaigning. And I'm sure my family very much appreciates that I can still pay the bills. But the fact of the matter is that I want to make a difference. You know, you want to be able to make some sort of an impact within your own individual sphere. And that's what I want to do. I've had the ability to serve my country before, and I'm very grateful I had that opportunity. And I want to continue that. I want to be able to make people's lives better, even if it's only one thing that I accomplish. That's one more thing than we had. And it's very fulfilling in my mind. And that's what I want to pursue.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. You both did so well. Many years ago, in different times, Thomas Paine spoke these words: "Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must undergo the fatigue of supporting it." I'd like to sincerely thank our two guests today, Tom Bry and Ryan Solon, for being among those who are demonstrating your commitment to freedom by taking the difficult step of running for public office in these really challenging times. For that dedication and your hard work and for being with us today, we thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's much appreciated.
You. You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elk.